Did you see this story about the Beatles today?
I did. Fascinating.
Very interesting. Sir Paul McCartney talks about the end of the Beatles.
And the great pain he experienced.
Said to be the last song they recorded together from Abbey Road. Now, he talks about the fact that there was a lot of rumors at the time about what it was that broke up the Beatles.
And wasn't Yoko Ono central to a lot of the rumors?
All
they
the
blamed
yeah.
her.
Yeah, a lot of them. And as it turns out, Sir Paul says, no, it wasn't that. It was really about the business, right?
He said the business side of things broke them up.
And he didn't like the way it was going, and he didn't want to operate under the same business principles that their new management team wanted to operate under, and that John Lennon was kind of going with that. Now, there's some question as to whether or not Yoko Ono had something to do with that part of it. Although, I mean, she's like a communist, right? I mean, isn't that how that goes?
He's basically vindicating her, saying that that's not what it was about. We had a new manager, new business practices, and everybody they weren't on the same page. But what I thought was fascinating is how hard he took it, and he thought he might not ever record music again.
Were you depressed at the time? I was depressed at the time.
Yeah, you would be. You would be too if it happened to you. It was very depressing, you know, because you were breaking from your lifelong friends, and we used to liken it to the army, where you'd been army buddies for a few years, and now you weren't going to see them again. There's an old song, Wedding Bells. Those wedding bells are breaking up this old gang of mine, and we kind of felt like that.
He's still like that. Poppy, he's 110 years old, and he's still got
composing
the thing
music
going.
In his mind.
Yeah, he just sings, you know, at the drop of a hat.
That's great.
It's really something. I find this all very interesting. I still want to blame Yoko for everything.
Well, was it because John Lennon was the one who first left the group, or how did it come about that she was the one blamed?
Well, Howard Kramer is with us. We've talked to Howard before. He's a former curator of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Howard, I mean, there are so many different stories here. Mm-hmm. And this interview that Sir Paul McCartney did, I mean, it sheds a little bit more light, but not complete spotlight on what happened.
Well, yeah, he hasn't kind of revealed everything, but a lot of the story has been out there for a while. And in truth, and I got to take you to task for this, Ro, is that you can't just lay this at the feet of Yoko Ono. She is not responsible for the breakup of the Beatles. And as Paul said, it was the business. And after Brian Epstein died in August of 1967, that's when things really started to unravel. You know, suddenly the responsibility of the band fell on them. Now, they had a very tight-knit group of people around them, most notably Neil Aspinall, who, you know, was a schoolmate of Paul's. And, they had a stage guy, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name, Mal Evans, who had been with them for a while. But they didn't have anyone to run the business. And when Paul talks about this element of this new business operation, that's Alan Klein he's referring to. And Alan Klein came to the Beatles essentially through Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones because he had worked with them. So that's where the split came, because three of the guys decided that Klein was a guy and Paul didn't want to do that, and he had his brother-in-law, Lee Eastman, advising him. And his, Lee Eastman, the attorney, was a very brilliant guy.
And Lee Easton, I mean, and people remember that this is, of course, his wife's brother, right?
So, yes.
And she came from that family, the Eastman Kodak family. That's the Eastman.
No, she's not related to the Eastman Kodak family. Actually, the original name of the family was Epstein. Someone changed it along the way.
Oh.
Yes, oddly enough, yes. It was one of those assimilationist things. But, no, they're not related to Eastman Kodak. And, her brother was a very successful attorney. Continues to be one of Paul's closest advisors to this day.
One of the things I thought was just so remarkable about the interview he gave is he talked about how after the breakup, Paul McCartney said, "I wasn't even sure whether I was going to continue music." I'm thinking, you're Paul McCartney. But he was so devastated, and it really felt final to him.
It's easy for you and I to say that, but look at it this way. He had spent essentially every waking moment with John Lennon and George Harrison, and then, you know, Ringo joined in 62, for about 9-10 years. They were constantly together. And then, you know, they were growing apart, which happens. You're not the same person at age 22 as you are 29.
Right.
Your priorities change. John had married and divorced. Ringo was married with kids. George was married, didn't have kids yet. Paul just got married and taken on a stepdaughter. Priorities change. Again, Brian Epstein was the backbone of the business operation. When he was gone, that's really when it started to fray. And, Paul wanted to lead it one way. And there's a lot of documentation about how there's a lot of, headbutting about who wanted to do what and where. And even when it came down to recording, to this day, no one will talk about the recording of the song Maxwell Silver Hammer, because apparently it was such a horrendous experience that they basically all never wanted to talk about it. Obviously, two can't, but Ringo still to this day won't talk about it.
Weird.
Well, okay, so what happened there? It came down, the Silver Hammer came down upon his head. I mean, that's how that went, right?
It came down to people weren't getting along. There's a new biography of Paul by Philip Norman, who's a fantastic writer and actually wrote probably the first best biography of the Beatles. Mark Lewisohn, who's essentially, the world's foremost Beatles biographer, is working on volume 2 of his 3-volume biography of the Beatles. In time, all this will be revealed, but suffice it to say, it's nice for him I think it's very generous for him to take the blame off of Yoko, because she's a very easy target. They still have to work together. They still have a business relationship. The Beatles exist as a business entity and probably make more money now than they have in their early part of their career. So it behooves him to do that.
Now, the song, the rights, the publishing rights have moved around a little bit, right?
Well, not the publishing. It comes down to the masters. The publishing rights, they have no involvement in that other than the songwriter's shares, without getting too deep into it. But
yeah,
the masters and the music is still controlled by the Beatles.
So for commercial purposes or repurpose, right? Or for
any purpose for those recordings of the Beatles are entirely the four of them, or Apple, as it were. They control that.
There's also the storyline about he gave an interview, Paul McCartney did, to BBC, and he said that Oprah had told him not to collaborate with Kanye West, and he's speaking out that because of the use of the N-word in that song All Day,
yeah,
and that she gave him a stern talking to. What are you doing here? It's fascinating stuff.
Oprah's in a position to say that to anybody. When you're at that level of success, you have a certain license to wag your finger in the face of almost anybody. But Paul McCartney's going to make his own artistic decisions. And, working with Rihanna and Kanye certainly didn't hurt him.
Mm-hmm. It made him relevant to a new generation, you could argue, that perhaps didn't really know him or understand.
I think that, my personal opinion of Kanye as an individual is separated from him as an artist, and that's true of anybody. I mean, there's a lot of people who made amazing music and amazing records who are not really great people. So got to separate the two. We can't just start assessing value judgments on artists as opposed to their art.
And that's what Paul McCartney said. He said, look, I'm inspired by him and find that he's a creative genius.
Mm-hmm.
It was very complimentary of Kanye West.
Yeah, I mean, you could very easily say some disparaging things about John Lennon and his personal life, but that's not what people talk about. They talk about how he was a great humanitarian and he fought for peace and, he walked like he talked. He did some reprehensible things as a young man.
Yeah.
But
sure,
that's not what we talk about nowadays.
Right.
So,
right,
Paul can work with whoever he wants. He's earned that.
Yes. Well, that's right. As I like to say, he's a Beatle, right?
That encapsulates it. He's a Beatle.
He's a Beatle.
Who are you?
Yeah, he can't do anything wrong.
Very true.
I was at an event in the winter and with a lot of high wattage Hollywood music people. And Ringo Starr walked into the room, and I don't care how big the people were. A guy walked up to me who's now a very famous reality star and a very famous producer.
Sure.
Who said, there's a Beetle in the room.
Oh.
It doesn't matter.
You can feel it, right?
There's a Beetle in the room, right?
It's a sea change, and there are very few people who can pull that off. I'll never forget watching. I was at the 25th anniversary Rock and Roll Hall of Fame concert, and U2's on stage, and they brought Mick Jagger on. You could feel the temperature of the room rise by about 15 degrees because Mick Jagger came on stage.
Hey, what do you think about, we've been giving away tickets, or we will be giving away tickets to this Desert Trip concert.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, how crazy, just as an aside here, Howard,
yeah,
How crazy is it to have a three-day festival that has Paul McCartney, so representing the Beatles, Roger Waters representing Pink Floyd, The Who, The Stones, Bob Dylan? How crazy is that?
I think it's actually brilliant that the promoters pulled this off, because that's a lot of big moving parts, you know?
Sure.
We're using a Star Wars, there's like six Death Stars there, you know, and how do you line them up so they don't, you know, kill each other and they're all working for good?
Oh, that's a good way to put it. I didn't think of that way.
They're just gigantic behemoths, and you know, it all made sense to them financially. I mean, it obviously all worked out. There was a lot of moving parts. You know, it's an expensive ticket, but I think if you have the inclination, this is going to be a very unique situation, because I also think you're going to see some cross-pollination, some artists, you know, showing up on stage with one another. I mean, Dylan and the Stones played together in Brazil several years ago when they played together. It was in 97, I think. They did some shows together. Paul McCartney and Neil Young are very good friends. It wouldn't surprise me if you see them together.
You know, I forgot to mention Neil Young is at that show too. That's the one I didn't mention.
It's a very interesting thing, the way they're doing it. I don't know if I'd go, but I certainly think it's great. I mean, I'm hoping that the Stones do more dates than just Southern California, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you know, they extended it an extra weekend because it sold out within, I don't know, hours, minutes. But do you see the stars aligning like this again for a future repeat of this? Get these bands together?
You're also dealing with a level of artists. Like, how many are there like this
that
you could do this with? It's, you know, these guys are not kids anymore. Virtually all of them are in their 70s, right? Bob Dylan is 75 today, right? Happy birthday,
Ooh.
Bob.
Happy birthday,
you know,
Bob.
Happy birthday, Bob. I mean, these are things to think about, because we have precious time.
Yeah,
precious
absolutely. Absolutely. So, this should be the bucket list tour. It's their bucket list at this point. And it's interesting, because I know we're short on time, and I'm over time here, but I got to know. Do the Stones and the Who and Paul McCartney, I mean, do they get along?
Well, I think these guys go back a long, long way. And yes, there are serious friendships there. They may not see each other all the time, but, you know, they do reflect on that, how that they still keep in touch. And I've seen some of these guys interact at various events, and you can see the genuine affection between them.
Right. I mean, who else has that experience, right?
Because with the Stones and the Beatles, no one else could understand exactly what they went through except those guys.
Right, exactly. Totally right. Howard, it's always great talking to you, man.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for disabusing me of the notion that Linda Eastman was an Eastman Kodak family. I thought that since I was like four.
And also saying you were too harsh on Yoko.
I was. Well, really? Do you have the Yoko? Did you get the Yoko? Really? I'm too harsh on Yoko?
You were.
Really?
That's what he said. I agree with him.
I don't think so.
Anything you say, dear.
John!
Yes! Okay. Really?
What does that prove?
Too harsh on Yoko. Violetta Pettermann, it's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Slots. First song we ever played that she did not dance to.
I don't know what just happened.
I don't either.
That was Yoko.
Yeah.
Screaming John's name.
I got that.
That was a song.
Mm. So she was an artist. She was an artist in her own right. She did.
Tom Brady and Yoko Ono. What?
I'm not that big of a fan of Yoko. I'm not a big fan. I just don't understand how that proves anything.